Welcome back to the Balancing Act podcast. I'm Andy Tempty. On the Balancing Act, we talk to business leaders and industry experts to explore the balancing acts we play in our professional lives and learn about the events that put rocket boosters behind their career success. Today, we have Elijah Kempton joining us. Elijah is Vice President of the West Region at engineering firm Campos EPC and is the Board Secretary at MathPath, a four-week residential summer program for students showing high promise and interest in mathematics and STEM education generally. Similar to last week's show, we'll be focusing on the world of STEM and STEM education, and that stands for science, technology, engineering, and math for the uninitiated. Welcome to the show, Elijah.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, really excited about our conversation today. With all of our guests, I ask this question, please tell our listeners your story.
Okay. Well, I'm coming to you from downtown Denver today, and I grew up here in Colorado. I went to the Colorado School of Mines for university, a local school here in Golden. And immediately out of school, I went got an opportunity down in Houston, Texas, where I went down and joined the energy industry down there. So after working down there for basically 6 years, I got really the opportunity of a lifetime to go to London to start an office for the company I was working for at the time. So went to London, and that went pretty well. And we ended up staying there for 6 years. Towards the end of the time that I was there, I was promoted to a vice president position where I was overseeing multiple different countries at that point. And then when we had our oldest child, we decided it was time to move home. So we moved back home, and I've been working in different companies in the energy sector here in Denver since. I've been with Campos EPC now for 2.5 years, and originally oversaw basically the center of the country, and then last year added on the responsibilities of the West Coast as well. So overall, I'm overseeing, I guess as of yesterday, 10 offices. And 10 physical offices and 400 people, roughly, depending on how you do the math there. But at a very high level, that's my story.
That's excellent. And I apologize to our listeners. My Midwestern, my Wisconsin English got the best of me. And I said Campos and not Campos.
No problem. So
apologies for that. I love London. We had a large division over in the UK, and I just loved visiting. What part of the city did you live in?
Well, I was very fortunate. So initially, it was interesting. My wife and I went over there, and I'd sold her on London, and then we ended up in a kind of a sleepy suburb town called Staines, which they've since rebranded as Staines upon Thames to make it sound a little bit more posh. I think it was a little different than she was expecting. And then as time went on, she was working in the city. And so we ended up moving to Richmond, which if we have any Ted Lasso fans out there, we lived in Richmond for 3 years. So I absolutely loved it there, and love watching the show because it certainly makes us a little homesick seeing all the locations that they film around there.
So they did film, because a lot of times they film these things in places that aren't where they're actually talking about. So they actually filmed Ted Lasso in Richmond?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, some of the locations are not exactly there, but there's certainly several that are recognizable if you've ever visited. So the pub that they go to, the green area, the theater, all of that is real and absolutely there. Highly recommend going there if you haven't been to that part of London.
Fantastic. So Elijah, you may have already touched on this, but what is that event in your life that was a key accelerant for your career?
Great question. I really, again, I'd go back to London. So when we, my wife and I, got the opportunity to go there. Basically, I'd been with my previous company for about 5 years, and they said, hey, would you like to go to London to start an office? And I said, I'd love to, but I'm in the middle of planning a wedding right now, and I think my future bride would kill me. So we held off a little bit, and then I was fortunate enough to, a year later, they came back and they still hadn't been able to fill the position. And they asked me again, and I said, absolutely. Well, hang on, maybe I should check with my new wife first to make sure that that's okay. Basically, we'd been married for 6 months. We each showed up with two suitcases and, you know, 3 to 6 months worth of work from BP. And it was sort of like, you know, see if you can make it work, make the office work over here. So at the time I was 28 years old. And I think had I been a little bit older and knew exactly what I was getting into, I would have looked at it differently, how difficult it was. But, you know, really built an office from scratch. And just really, we had the time of our lives over there, being able to be in a completely different environment. You really learn about who you are as a person. And, you know, also having to navigate work in a different environment, even though, you know, initially I was thinking, well, we both speak English, so culturally they should be similar. There are a lot of pretty significant cultural differences between the countries. And so I had to navigate that, but really had the time of my life over there, and wouldn't trade that experience for anything. But I'd say that probably accelerated my career by 5 to 10 years just by doing that experience.
Yeah. Great advice for our listeners. If you have the ability, the willingness and ability to travel and live in another place, different culture early in your career like that, what a wonderful, really gift that was at that point of your career at the ripe young age of 28. So congratulations. Elijah, I'm really interested in your education. My one of my strong mentors, Carl Swazer, we grew the Swazer Study Program together in the 1990s. He attended the Colorado School of Mines back in the 1960s. And I'd just like to chat with you about your experience at the school. Carl tells the story of he was dropped off unceremoniously in a station wagon, which was the minivan of the day, with a Harry Potter style trunk and his wits, and that's all he had. So I have this kind of Hogwarts image in my mind. What's the school really like?
Well, it's funny you mentioned the Hogwarts reference, because I give a guest lecture there once a semester in a class called Engineering Your Career Path, which is about helping the students. Basically, I talk about my experiences working abroad and encouraging folks to do that, just like you did for your listeners just now. But I've taken my oldest son, who was actually born in London, to a couple of those. And the first time he went when he was five, he was just like, oh, they have dorms here. It's just like Harry Potter. So that was his impression. But what I will say, so it was very tough. And I will say that they've taken great strides since your friend went there. And I think it's a much more inclusive and pleasant place to be, but certainly it was very challenging. So I learned a lot about how to think critically and really my work ethic. And so it was probably, in terms of investing in myself, probably the best ROI that I've done throughout my entire life. And so I had a really great experience there. I also am glad that I never have to do it again. So that would be my take on it.
That phrase you used, ROI, we at Kaplan, we used the term ROEI, the return on educational investment. And I'm super glad that you had a very high return on educational investment. For our listeners, generally, the return on engaging in any kind of formal education, be it a certificate or a degree program, the return on that investment, if you pour yourself into it like you did, is almost assuredly going to be high. Let's switch gears to the engineering world. Continuing with my friend Carl, he started his career at McDonnell Douglas as an engineer, and then he made the switch over to education and finance. And I've seen many engineer friends of mine through the years cross over from engineering into other fields. foods. I'd like to get your perspective on the richness and versatility of an education grounded in engineering, because some people get the impression that once you're in engineering, you're always in engineering and you can kind of get stuck grinding away at a drafting table for the rest of your life. Help us debunk that.
Yeah, so it's interesting you mentioned the finance area, because one of the things I was surprised to learn, so when I was in London, I was in a very highly technical field, really, and so I was looking for very qualified chemical engineers to join the team. And I decided to go to the best school that I could find, which was Imperial College in London. And what was really interesting when I started recruiting there, I found my competition wasn't other engineering companies like I was used to in the US. A lot of times it was the banks that were trying to grab all these engineers because they knew that they had good quantitative abilities and they knew they'd be able to move them into that industry. So I saw that straight away, that even if your degree was in something, you could end up in a different field. For myself, again, I'm a chemical engineering degree originally, and my first job out of school was actually 50% doing hydraulic modeling and then computer simulations, and then the other half was managing a lab. And for me, I learned very early, 22 years old, that I really liked the management side of it. I liked the leadership side of it. And I've sort of been able to move into this, 50-50 split of doing technical work and leadership. So I was very struck by Thomas Friedman's book a few years ago, Thank You for Being Late, where he talks about, really the best way to protect yourself when you're thinking about, there's so much change in the world and your skills are outdated fairly quickly, is to have this STEMpathy approach. So basically have the STEM foundation, but then have the people side of it as well. And that's a really good way to kind of, inoculate yourself against, basically always being able to have a job ideally. So that's how I view that situation.
STEMpathy. That is fantastic. I really, really, really love that. I had never heard that before. Thank you. Elijah, before we jump to our commercial break, we're going to be talking about you're the board secretary for MathPath. What's the organization's purpose?
So MathPath is a middle school camp that's held in the summer for 4 weeks at a residential university. So basically the camp accepts 11 to 14 year olds, and it's really to help support the development both academically and socially for mathematically gifted students. So at a very high level, that's how the organization works.
Well, we're going to take a really short commercial break, and we'll be right back with Elijah Kempton to talk more about MathPath. Hi, I'm Andy Tempty. Over the past 35 years, I've learned a lot about business leadership, and I'd like to share those lessons with you. Ask yourself, how do I create an effective, sustainable management operating system? How do I design smooth workflows to better serve the customer? How do I balance organizational trust with accountability? The Balanced Business describes the practical, step-by-step process you need to answer these questions. Order your copy today, wherever books are sold. And we're back with Elijah Kempton talking about the world of engineering and STEM education and careers. Elijah, I just love what you're doing at MathPath. Tell us more about the experience that an average MathPath program attendee has during one of these summer programs. And along the way, how do you measure success for an attendee in the months and years following the program?
Absolutely. So I was fortunate enough to go with my oldest son, who's 11 now, back to see the program last year in Portland. And we went on a Saturday, and Saturday is kind of the day where they help kind of frame what the week is going to look like. So at the highest level, basically, as I mentioned before, the program is 4 weeks long. And each week, the students choose one sort of area of focus that they're going to work on in their breakout sessions the following week. So what's really interesting is when we were there, we went to sort of the pitch sessions where they've got several college professors that are there from around the country, and they come in and they basically pitch to the kids what they're going to talk about, or, you know, what problems they're going to work on the next week, what topic. And the kids then decide, you know, which areas they want to go into. And there's different kind of paces for the kids, depending on what they're doing. And then that's sort of their focus for the next week. And along with that, they end up with, you know, during the weekdays, they have, you know, the history of math lectures. They've got social activities and things like that. So it's not just, you know, too heavy. There's a lot of kind of a student fellowship that occurs as well. And then on the weekends, they end up doing activities in the city where they are. So it's a very, very special program that I'm very happy to be a part of. In terms of success, really, the way that I look at measuring near-term success is just for students to come out of the program with an enthusiasm for mathematics and the confidence that they can do it. I know I think back as being a kid, and you know, I think sometimes the world tells you you can't be good at some of these things. And I think if you're in a situation that's encouraging and you're doing pretty difficult things and you come out the other side and you have more enthusiasm for it, I think certain things that happened to me in my life made me believe that I could become an engineer. And so whether it's mathematics or engineering or any of the STEM fields, if students come out with this enthusiasm and realizing there's a community around them to support them, I think that's great. Longer term, I mean, really why I got involved with the organization to begin with is I was trying to think of the best way that I could help improve the world in terms of basically helping to make more critical thinkers in the world. I feel like there's a real, you know, we could certainly do with more critical thinking in the world. And to me, being able to, you know, help kids at a really formative period of their lives to think more critically can have, personally, I think that can have long-term societal implications, but that's really what drives me from a passion perspective.
Yeah. I'd like, you know, the next question is going to be more about accessibility into the STEM field, but if we could just pause for a moment, and I don't want to surprise you here with this question, but I'm going to anyway. Suppose you had a middle school educator sitting in front of you right now, and you know, kind of, we know about this negative both self-talk and societal talk of you can't do this, math is hard. It really keeps people out of those perceptions, keep people out of this very, very important field. And how do you recommend that a high school teacher or a middle school teacher helps break down some of those stereotypes that, oh, I'm not a math person, I'm you know, this isn't for me, so therefore I will never try? How do we break some of that stuff down?
So I think the big thing, I think there's two main things for me. One is to just be encouraging. And, you know, I work with I've got two boys, and I work with them sometimes on their homework. And one of the things we've been working on recently is, hey, you're not always going to know exactly the answer the first time, but try it, maybe go away for a little bit, let your mind keep thinking about it, and then come back to it. And what I'm really looking for is effort, you know. Just try to keep, that's how you learn, is the effort. It's not that you need to get it 100% right straight away. But so I think encouraging is really important. And then I think the other thing is really coming up with interesting problems that they will relate to that make it fun. So I don't know, you know, what is the mass of the earth? You know, what's the speed of light? Much better examples that I can come up with on the fly. But I think there's a lot of really fun things that you can do around it to make it more enjoyable so it isn't so much of a chore. And that's part of what I was excited about when I went to MathPath, is some of the ways that they're framing things. They're talking about some of it is very advanced, particularly for the older kids. But they frame it in a way that's like solving interesting problems, and it's fun. So I know when I went with my son, that was one of the things he took away, was like, oh, that was a really interesting topic that they were talking about. Not so much how you actually solve it. It's the story behind it.
Yeah. So Elijah, historically, careers in STEM fields have been predominantly occupied by people that look like me, white males. From your perspective, how do we get more students who do not fit the stereotypical mold interested in careers in STEM?
Yeah, it's a great question. So obviously, I just talked about the two things that I think teachers potentially could do better in terms of, you know, being encouraging and being more creative. Really, your question kind of gets down to the heart of why I got involved with MathPath originally, which is I wanted to create opportunities to be able to do something like this for students that maybe didn't have access before. So when I originally started getting involved, it was 15 years ago, and I just started donating money for scholarships because I thought it was an important thing for people to do. And so I think a lot of it is, you know, basically creating awareness that there are things that exist where you can go further, and then basically providing support for people where you can to try to diversify the group that you have. So I know that's something that I'm passionate about, and we're having our board meeting in a couple of weeks, and I think that's something we're going to be talking about there a little bit, that we actually talk about almost every board meeting, is how do we get more diversity in the camp? How do we expose this to more people? But I think on a personal level for me, what I'd say that I've tried to do, and I guess what maybe I'd challenge listeners to do, is this is something that you're passionate about, you can either donate money, you can donate time, or work with your company to help in those areas as well, to kind of give more resources. So Compo CPC, for example, has sponsored half of a student scholarship and then a full student scholarship, which I'm very proud of. In a small way, we're trying to expand that a little bit there, but it's definitely an uphill climb, I think, to create more representation there.
Yeah. Well, I feel it's an obligation that I have to improve diversity in a number of fields, and this is one of them. So thank you for engaging in that question. Now for a skills-based question. We talk a lot about skills on this show. I like to run thought experiments as well. So let's suppose you have a MathPath student or a new college graduate from a STEM field sitting in front of you right now. What's the most important human or soft skill that you would coach them to hone before they enter the workforce? And we might have already talked about it through the STEMpathy, but I'd like you to expand on that.
Yeah, it's a great question. So over my career now, I've been to countless career days at universities, and I've talked to many, many students there. So What's interesting to me, I think probably at a very bottom line, what I would say is be able to have a conversation with people. So when I recruit, I'm basically looking for three things. I'm looking for technical competence. So you can usually suss that out based on their resume. I'm looking for grit. So, you know, have people had jobs outside of, have you worked? You know, for me, for example, I worked at a fast food restaurant when I was in high school. It taught me a ton about customer service. You know, have you done those sorts of things? So that's the grit element. And then the last one is around, can I have a beer with this person? So the last one, I think, is probably the one that's the most challenging and the one that I tend to see the least amount of candidates that are in that sort of category. So I know for me, for example, with my sons, one of the things that I'm looking at is encouraging them to have conversations with adults and be able to talk about interesting things, ask them questions about themselves. So I suppose it sounds very simple, but it's kind of becoming increasingly rare that you find folks that are, you know, very personable and can have conversations. But I think if you've got the combination of the STEM and that, it's kind of your superpower to what I mentioned before in terms of that STEMpathy idea.
Yeah. And for hiring managers, I've heard that, you know, as a benchmark, if I could have a beer with this person, I love that perspective. But as long as doesn't tip over into my people have to be my friends. And those
are exactly,
those are very different things to be able to have a a constructive conversation with somebody over a beer and even have a little constructive conflict over it, but in a rational, logical fashion. That's what I'm not put, hopefully not putting words in your mouth, but I see your head shaking that's really what you mean by that interview.
Yeah, absolutely.
Question. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks. Elijah, let's close out the show with a little bit of fun. I've got a lightning round question for you, just one today. I'm giving you access to a time machine. You can send a short message to an earlier version of yourself. What's the message and what previous version of yourself do you choose to send it to?
Well, I think what I'd say is you are 100% responsible for your own career path. And so what I mean by that is I would have basically gone back to thinking about myself at critical points in my life, you know, between my junior and senior year in college, my last year in London when I was trying to figure out what I was doing next, right? Just critical junction in my life of you need to be thinking about what your career is looking like in the next step, but you probably need to be looking at what it's going to look like in the next two or three steps as well, and make sure you're always in control of what's going on, because you can't always rely on other people to necessarily be doing that work for you.
Yeah. Some people talk about you make your own luck. You do things to create the environment for others to say yes to you. And that is what you're talking about, is taking that responsibility. Certainly people are going to say yes. That individual that sent you off at age 28 to London, but you did things prior to that yes that set the environment for that. Would you agree with that assessment?
Absolutely. I'm thinking back, I'm a big movie buff. And Robert Evans, the legendary producer from, I believe, Paramount, had a documentary called The Kid Stays in the Picture. And he talked about luck is when preparation meets opportunity. So that's always how I've looked at it as well.
Yeah. Thank you. Elijah, you've been a fantastic guest and have created so much value for our listeners. Thank you for being here today.
Oh, I had a great time. Thank you very much for having me.
Excellent. Well, my name is Andy Tempty. This is the Balancing Act podcast. You can find us on all the major streaming services. Please like, subscribe, rate, and most importantly, share this public good with your friends. We'll see you next time.